Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Clark from the Center for Weight Loss Success. On this podcast of Doc Weight Loss, I'm going to talk a little bit about carbohydrate sensitivity and insulin resistance. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Again, this is Dr. Clark, and on this podcast, we're going to talk a little about carbohydrate sensitivity and insulin resistance, and that kindly leads kind of into diabetes mellitus. So first thing we're going to talk about is kind of what is it? What's carbohydrate sensitivity? And then kind of talk about how does that potentially progress to insulin resistance, to diabetes, and then finally kind of what can you do about this? Okay, what can you do and what are some tips to help you through all this? All right, just give you a little overview about this. But, you know, if you think about this and look statistically at the U.S. population, 2 out of 3 Americans are overweight. Okay, so that means most people are overweight. And about 1 out of 2 of these, or, you know, we look at that statistically, it's about 1/3 of the population are actually considered obese. Okay. When someone is labeled as obese, and that typically means a body mass index over 30, okay, usually about 50 pounds, you know, 40, 50 pounds overweight, your risk of developing diabetes is about 80% higher than a normal weight person. All right. And then just about 50% of Americans are actually thought to be insulin resistant. Now, you don't necessarily have to be way overweight to be insulin resistant. And insulin resistance is a stepping stone to diabetes. So we're going to talk about these things. And it's estimated that about 1 of 2 Americans will be diabetic by 2020. That's not very far down the road here. So this type of thing, though, doesn't happen overnight. It's something that occurs over years and years and years. And it's not something that just all of a sudden I woke up and, oh, now I'm a diabetic. It's like, no, there was a continuing here. And it typically starts with carbohydrate sensitivity, eventually to insulin resistance, and then pre-diabetes, and that diabetes, and that's typically diabetes type 2. Diabetes type 1 is kind of a different animal. Diabetic type 1, if you're diabetic, there's a type 1 diabetic, you don't make any insulin. For diabetes type 2, you actually make plenty of insulin. Your body's just very resistant to it and can't control the blood sugars anymore. All right, so let's talk about a little bit more then about this carbohydrate sensitivity. This occurs, and about 2/3 of the population is affected by this. So it's very, very common. And you do not have to be overweight to be affected by this. We see many, many people that have these symptoms. So what happens is, there's a delay in the normal insulin response when someone eats carbohydrates. So if you eat a carbohydrate meal, then typically up some, and there should be a nice little rise in the insulin to control the blood sugar. Now, if there's a delay in the normal insulin response, this will result then in a large blood sugar spike. So you get this spike going way up in the air, and then you get this huge overcompensation spike in the release of insulin. So you initially get this delay in the release of insulin, and now you get this overcompensation spike in the insulin. And when that occurs, this results in a quick blood sugar fall. And it's this quick blood sugar fall that produces symptoms. And the symptoms are very, very common. Headaches, tiredness, irritability, I feel shaky, I have to lay down for a little while, I can't concentrate, I feel like I'm just not thinking clearly, I have significant hunger, significant craving, it's usually for cravings that makes blood sugar go back up, I've got to eat something right now. Very common symptoms, literally 2/3 of the American population gets this. Now, the thing that can help this most is actually don't get the spike. Okay, now that what I mean by that is if you're prone to this delay and then this overcompensation, the real answer there is don't get the spike in the blood sugar. If you don't get the spike in the blood sugar, you don't get the plummet in the blood sugar. What most people don't realize is that starving people actually keep their blood sugars rock stable. They're perfect. Okay, they're literally perfect. Their blood sugars aren't, because your body will continue, even if you're not eating anything, your body can produce sugar. It can make sugar. So it keeps your blood sugars rock stable. They're perfect. It's only when we start eating that things get thrown out of whack. And it's typically the carbohydrate that we eat that throws these out of whack. So the treatment there is, don't get the rise. If you don't get the rise, you don't get the fall. And the reason we say that is because the symptoms that occur with carbohydrate sensitivity, those headaches, the shakiness, I feel a little faint, I've got to lay down. The symptoms occur, it's not due to the actual number. The symptoms occur due to the speed of the fall. So it's the speed of the fall that causes the symptoms. But the speed of the fall always mirrors the speed of the rise. And so again, the treatment for it is, don't get the rise. And if don't eat, that caused that big blood sugar spike. So if you get it back previously that gave me a big blood sugar spike, fall. And it's the fall that causes the symptoms, and it's the speed of the fall. Now, this happens over kind of a number of years. Eventually, this can do insulin resistance. What this means then is that as your cells are exposed to this overabundance of insulin, as you got this big overcompensation, so your cells are exposed to this higher blood sugars followed by higher insulin, and subsequently your cells become a little resistant to the insulin itself. And what that means is that it requires more insulin to actually keep the blood sugars in that normal range. So as your cells are exposed to more and more of the higher blood sugar, higher insulin levels, all of a sudden now it requires even more insulin to do that. And sometimes these higher insulin levels may go undetected for years, because if you get your fasting blood sugar done, your blood sugars may be perfect. They may be normal, but it may be that it took this much insulin, to actually a tremendous amount of insulin, to actually keep those blood sugars normal. Now, so, you know, what's the problem? Why are we concerned? So what if it takes so much insulin? Okay, the problem there is that insulin does lots of things we wish insulin wouldn't do. Now, its main job is trying to keep blood sugars normal. That's insulin's main job. But unfortunately, insulin does a lot of other things. Insulin makes you retain water. Insulin can make your blood pressure go up. Insulin makes cholesterol go up. Insulin makes triglycerides go up. And insulin turns on fat storage. We've talked a number of times about this. I won't go into the detail today, but it turns on the enzyme lipoprotein lipase, which basically makes us store fat. So insulin turns on fat storage. So this is the real problem with high insulin levels. Now, eventually, if it takes more and more insulin, unfortunately, then eventually the body can't control the blood sugar. So eventually the insulin levels are going up, takes more and more insulin, and now eventually the blood sugar starts drifting up. When the blood sugars start drifting up, that's what diabetes is. Okay, so eventually your body's unable to keep the blood sugars in a decent range, and so diabetes then comes up. But before you get there, you get that to that level, what we call pre-diabetes. Now, what does that actually mean? Basically, what we're referring to is when insulin can no longer keep blood sugars quite in the normal range. They may not be at the diabetic range, but they're not quite in the normal range. We typically, kind of as a definition, what we say is that when fasting levels are over 100 but less than 125, they're kind of that pre-diabetic. But again, I like you to think of this really as a continuum. Not necessarily as there's a level, all of a sudden at 125 I'm pre-diabetic, but at 126 I'm diabetic. I was like, that actually makes no sense. This is all a continuum here. But kind of as a lab definition, what we typically use in the US is fasting levels between 100 and 125 are kind of labeled pre-diabetes. All right, but eventually that leads to diabetes. And this again is diabetes type 2. Type 1 is a different animal. Okay, so diabetes type 2, basically after many years, the pancreas cannot really make enough insulin to keep the blood sugars decent. Okay, so the blood sugars again tend to go. So you get some uncontrolled blood sugars. Now uncontrolled blood sugars can actually potentially cause many health problems as well, from heart problems, kidney problems, vascular problems. This is kind of, if you've known people that have high or poorly controlled diabetes, often they get many vascular problems, but that can be heart disease, but it could be Alzheimer's disease, strokes. It could be, you know, just high blood pressure, could be kidney failure. So lots of things. That diabetes is a potentially horrendous disease because it leads to so many other problems. But again, kind of these elevated insulin levels also lead to fat storage. And again, you're going to have worsening of water retention, blood pressure problems, cholesterol problems, triglyceride problems, and truly kind of a diabetic that's out of control. All right. So what can you do about this? I mean, this sounds like, gee, this can, you know, what do I do to help prevent these things from occurring? As many people note that kind of the diabetes has a run in families. So there is some genetic propensity to this, but also there's probably some, okay, nurture propensity to this, is that it's often exposure to the high carbohydrate, high processed foods. So what can you do about it? Basically, there are two key elements to controlling and reversing the effects of the carbohydrate sensitivity, insulin resistance, in diabetes type 2. So again, two key elements. And those two key elements are reduce your carbohydrate intake, okay, and then exercise. Now, by reducing carbohydrate intake, basically this relieves the pancreas from having to make so much insulin. So if we relieve the pancreas, you don't need as much insulin. So it relieves the pancreas from needing to secrete so much insulin. The best way to keep insulin levels low is to avoid eating the things that make insulin levels go up, which basically anytime your blood sugar goes up, insulin levels go up. So what we're talking about there is avoiding the carbohydrates, especially the simple carbohydrates. One of the nice, you know, insulin's a hormone. We've talked about this in the past, but insulin's a hormone, but it's one of the few hormones you have control over. Insulin doesn't go up until your blood sugars go up. Blood sugars go up directly dependent on what you eat. Yeah, typically the carbohydrate that you eat, and especially the simple carbohydrates, processed carbohydrates. And I want to make this point too, is that insulin is a hormone we can't live without. So it's not like we'd want to get rid of it. We can't. That would be terrible. Your blood sugars would be way out of control. But insulin is a hormone we can't live without, but you want to live with the absolute smallest number possible because of all the other problems that insulin tends to cause. All right, so first one, okay, keep an eye on the carbohydrate. The second part of that, though, is exercise. Exercise is going to be very helpful with not only controlling blood sugars, but it helps you preserve kind of the lean body mass, which keeps your metabolism higher. It's our lean body mass, really our muscle mass, where we can store some carbohydrate. In our bodies, we can only store a small amount of carbohydrate in our bodies. A small amount in our liver, it's actually a very small amount, a tiny amount in our bloodstream. I mean, literally, if you think about it, a blood sugar of 100, you have about a teaspoon, kind of just a little bit more than a teaspoon of sugar. And that's in our entire bloodstream. We have about 5 liters of blood in our body. So in about a little more than a teaspoon, that's it. You know, we think about, gee, if you eat a, you know, big candy bar, that's like, how many teaspoons is that? You could have, you know, your blood sugar in your blood. It's amazing we keep our blood sugar as good as it is. Yeah. Anyway, so only a tiny amount in our bloodstream, a little more than a teaspoon, only a very small amount in our liver, but we can store some carbohydrate, sugar, in our muscles. But it's very dependent on how much muscle you have. So preserving lean body mass, I guess the concept there is that, you know, if you have a tank full of gas in your car, you can't put more gas into the car until you burn all that off. Well, kind of you think about the muscles as being the tank to store your sugar as glycogen. Well, the bigger your tank, the more muscle mass you have, the more lean body mass you have, the more you can store. And so subsequently then exercise is a great way to do that. So you build muscle mass, but also exercise is the way to burn that down. Just like in your gas tank in your car, you can't put more gas in until you drive the car around. So if you filled up, you need to drive the car around in order to be able to put more gas into it. Well, again, we can't actually add more carbohydrate, more sugar into the muscles for it to be stored unless you burn off what's already in, because it can only store a certain amount. So exercise helps preserve this. It helps burn that carbohydrate that you have stored there, but also the lean body mass, it makes your tank bigger. Weightlift is for this, and for lots of reasons. If you're weightlifting, you can actually kind of get down so that you're utilizing the carbohydrate quicker than if you're doing cardio, as well as weightlifting, if you can actually build more lean body mass or build muscle mass there. So reduce the carbohydrate intake and exercise, especially weight training. All right, so a few tips for success as we wind this down. One is just know your numbers. You should know, what is your fasting blood sugar? What is your hemoglobin A1C, which gives you an idea of what's happened over the past few months. Get with your healthcare provider. Know what your, what I'll call the effective carbohydrate intake is. And just because everyone will have a tipping point to how much carbohydrate they're sensitive to. Because if you go above that tipping point of carbohydrate. Now, for some people, it seems like the tipping point is way high. They seem like they can eat anything they want to, never gain a pound. And it's not that they have a different physiology. They just have a more efficient physiology. It only takes a small amount of insulin to keep their blood sugars decent. For those, and when you're in maintenance, you really want to make sure you're not going above that tipping point. Thirdly, make exercise a routine part of your day. Eat regularly so that you don't get those big swings. I like people to think of eating plain as kind of three meals a day, plus minus a snack. And making kind of protein-based meals, and then what I'll call the healthy, nutrient-dense, not calorie-dense, but nutrient-dense carbohydrates, such as colorful vegetable salad stuff. They're low carbohydrate, but nutrient-dense. So you want to avoid then those big blood sugar swings, because the big blood sugar swings, again, that cause. So then it's kind of keeping that balance. Regular meals, kind of balanced meals, protein levels, typically I encourage people to keep them at least equal to or higher than carbohydrate levels. Some of it depends on who you are to carbohydrates, and everyone's a little bit different. All right, you want more information? Please don't hesitate to ask. First, go to our corporate website, which is cfwls.com. Or if you want more access to me, you can ask questions directly. Do it every week for our webinar, Losing Weight USA. It's www.losingweightusa.com. Go to that site, sign up, access our webinars, tips every week, recipes every week, and you can ask me questions every week. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And if you, again, have more questions, don't hesitate to ask. Stay tuned for our next podcast. It should be coming up sometime in the next week or two. And remember, it's your life. Make it a healthy one. Have a good day, everyone. Take care.